Welcome to the podcast series from the 8th Educational Seminar on Migration 2021 entitled Migration in a Multilateral World, organized by the European Migration Network in Slovakia. You are listening to the lecture on the theory and practice of migration from the Global South perspective presented by Raul Delgado Wise. Raul is professor of development studies at Autonomous University of Zacatecas in Mexico. He is also president and founder of the International Network on Migration and Development, co-director of the Critical Development Studies Network, editor of the journal Migración y Desarrollo, and UNESCO chair on migration, development, and human rights. Enjoy the lecture.
Well, good afternoon. Here in Mexico is early in the morning. Well, first of all, I want to thank IOM Slovakia, no, for this invitation. Well, my presentation is going to be divided in five parts. In the first part, I will begin with trying to discuss the theoretical and political battlefront regarding the discussion between migration and development, considering what I will regard as the mainstream, the dominant, the hegemonic perspective versus an alternative, a counter-hegemonic that I also will name Southern perspective. Then I will turn to the need to reconceptualize, to expand the notion of forced migration in the context of contemporary capitalism, namely neoliberal globalization. In third place, I will talk about the importance of demystifying and of building demystifying indicators that in order to change something that I will talk about, the dominant narrative. And then I will turn to a few words regarding the global governance of migration, and end up with some concluding remarks. Next slide, please. Well, before I talk about the theoretical and political battlefront, I want to say something regarding why we are discussing migration and development in the political arena. Why is this important concern? Migration and development was incorporated into the UN's institutional framework on the global governance of migration since 2006. At that time, in the introduction of an edited book named Migration and Development Perspectives from the South, published by IOM in 2008. This book was edited by Stephen Castles and myself, and we noticed suddenly migration and development is the flavor of the month. For many years, politicians and officials in labor-importing countries have seen South-North migrants as a problem for national identity and social cohesion. And more recently, even as a threat to national security. Now, such policymakers are doing everything to emphasize the potential benefits of international migration for countries of origin. But Stephen and I ask ourselves, why this new concern? Why linking migration to development? Our initial thoughts, based on our previous work in the field, were that linking migration to development was a strategy to control migratory flows and maximize its benefits for the receiving countries through what was also called migration management, and as a tactical move for securing cooperation from southern origin and transit countries. The next slide, please. Well, in this slide, I just want to mention something. In the last 15 years, international migration has grown at a rate at a faster rate than the population. And the next slide, please. Migration has become a critical aspect of contemporary capitalism. We have nowadays, according to UN figures, 280 million international migrants, plus around 750 million internal migrants. So we have around nearly one of every seven inhabitants in the planet lives in a place that is different from where they were born. I will argue that regardless of the strategic importance of this phenomenon, migration studies and public perceptions of human mobility are fraught with myths that distort reality, under unilateral, decontextualized, reductionist, and biased views. Given the critical challenges propelled by human mobility, the global governance of migration has become a fundamental issue on the international agenda. We have like the high-level dialogue that was launched in 2006 and also in 2013. Then we have the GFND, the Global Forum on Migration and Development, who started in 2007. And we have already 12 editions of this forum. And lastly, the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Secure Migration, launched in Morocco in 2018. Next slide, please. Well, the mainstream, the hegemonic, the dominant position in the discussion of migration and development is supported by the national security doctrine. It implies in many ways the criminalization of migrants. One of the main things regarding this position is that it tends to reduce legal channels for migration that are far below the actual labor needs of destination countries. And I will also say a few words later on how this turns irregular migration as a state policy. It also promotes what has been called in these discussions corporate-driven public policies, the sanctification of temporary workers programs, and what is very, very important, this is supported also by what has been called by, for instance, Kapoor, the remittances mantra, which means a unidirectional relationship between migration and development. Migration through remittances should become a main driver for development in countries of origin. This position is basically promoted by the World Bank fosters, in my opinion, the prevailing mythology regarding migrants as public enemies. Next slide, please. Well, we have, in contrast to this position, we have an alternative counter-hegemonic that we call the Southern position. This position is, instead of the national security doctrine, it is based on human security, a human security framework, which regards human rights at the center. It also tries to make visible the contribution of migrants to destination countries. And together with this, it addresses the root causes of contemporary migration. It aims to reduce social inequalities and asymmetries among countries, regions, and within countries. It also promotes the expansion of free circulation regimes. It encourages universal decent work, and it opens pathways for full citizenship. Next slide, please. Well, we call this Southern perspective. When we use this name, I want to emphasize that we are, this not, does not entail the negation of the North, but rather, in dialectical terms, the negation of the negation. It is an attempt to build an integral and inclusive, an emancipatory and libertarian perspective on migration and development. It is a view that is grounded in critical development studies. Next slide, please. And I want now to show you this graphically. Here you can see in this horizontal axis, basically how the we have the dominant position. And you can see here that migration in destination is a unidirectional relation that goes from destination countries to countries of origin. And now the please go on with the with this slide. Then we have incorporated to this not only a two-way relation, a dialectical relationship about between countries of origin and destination, but we are also incorporated transit countries, and most importantly, go on please with the diagram. We are incorporated, go on. We are incorporated also human rights, the impacts on migrants' rights and their families. Go on, please. And also the very, very important, the root causes of migration. So we have this vertical axis that is crucial in the alternative perspective. And we also have, go on, please, the need to understand, go on, to understand the context in which the relationship between migration and development is in, embedded. So it is very important, and I will turn now to the next slide, to try to understand deeply the context in which the relationship between migration and development is embedded. Here, I think it's important in order to understand contemporary capitalism, the extreme concentration and centralization of capital that characterizes contemporary capitalism, the omnipresence of monopoly capital, that is this domination of the large multinational corporations, what, for instance, Amir Amil called the era of generalized monopolies. And I will give you just one data, which I think is important. The largest companies in the world, those with more than $1 billion US dollars in annual sales, account for 75% of global earnings. Therefore, against the myth of free market that is behind the neoliberal discourse, which is the pillar of neoliberal ideology, monopoly capital or the large multinational corporations have become key players in contemporary capitalism. Next slide, please. What I want to argue is that there has been a strong shift of multinational corporations or monopoly capital towards the underdeveloped countries, the periphery, as we call it in Latin America, the Latin American school of thought, in search of abundant, cheap, and flexible labor based on what has been called global labor arbitrage, the wage differentials among countries and regions, and the pillage of natural resources. This has been called by the Monley School of Thought a recolonization of an imperialist recolonization of the periphery. 60% of the assets, employment, and sales of the top 100 multinational corporations are allocated in peripheral, underdeveloped, and emerging countries. This has engendered a new international division of labor, a new modalities of unequal exchange that have expanded and deepened uneven development and social inequalities to unbearable levels. And let me give you in the next slide some data. This has meant also this huge concentration and centralization of capital has meant a global offensive against the working class. And here, one important issue is that the massive oversupply of labor that characterizes contemporary capitalism. The supply of workers for capital double with the dismantling of the ex-Soviet Union and the incorporation of China into the world capitalist system. It doubled in two decades. This has been called the Great Doubling by Freeman in 2006. Nowadays, according to ILO figures, we have 1.9 billion workers in vulnerable labor conditions, which is almost 60% of the working class. We have also 617 million that are poor, 188 million that are unemployed. Youth employment rate doubles average unemployment. And something that is very, very important, we have also 2 billion, which is 61% of the working class that is allocated in the informal sector. But what is more important, this informal sector is unevenly distributed, and the working conditions are unevenly distributed among this north-south divide. Informality is nearly 90% in low-income countries, whereas in high-income countries, it's less than 20%. And I regard this as one of the main drivers of contemporary migration. Next slide, please. Well, I just want to mention here, in order to have time to complete my presentation, that you can see here in the slide that the countries in green, US, Canada, you can see the European Union countries and Australia. They are basically receiving countries, and most of the countries that have the largest informal sector are basically immigration countries. Next slide, please. Here, I want to say that the large corporations are not only growing and have a huge presence in today's capitalism, but they are also suffer very important transformation. One thing that has been broadly discussed is the importance of financial monopoly capital. Through financializations, also it has been greatly discussed the presence of extractivism and land grabbing through these large mining corporations, oil corporations, but also agrobusinesses. And the most important thing, and this is what I put it in underlined these two other issues, there has been a transformation of the industrial sector through global value chains that I call these global networks of monopoly capital, and also an important restructuring of innovation systems. Next slide, please. So what is important to notice is that there is a new geography today of industrial production that is based in the two last industrial revolutions, the third and fourth revolution of ICT and technosciences. And also this is based on global labor arbitrage, wage differentials among countries and regions. My central argument is that there is a new international division of labor that is based on what I regard as the exportation of labor power, which is the most valuable commodity today. And there are two types of exportation of labor power. The first one that I'm putting in the slide is a disembodied exportation of labor. This is a key concept against the fetish of industrial exports, and also the direct labor, direct exportation of labor power through labor migration. So this has led to new modalities of an unequal exchange. Next slide, please. In order to understand this, the indirect exportation of labor power that I call the disembodied exportation of labor power, we have to take into consideration that through the illusion, the fetish of industrial exports in special economic zone that operate as enclaves with imported inputs and tax exemption regimes, especially in peripheral countries, what actually is being exported is labor power without leaving the country. It is estimated, and I'm giving here an important data, that there are around 100 million workers directly employed in assembly plants, maquiladoras, as we call them, in the South, in the global South, and over 5,400 export processing zones or special economic zones that are established in 147 countries, according to UNCTAD data. Next slide, please. Now, I think it would be crucial also to reconceptualize, as I mentioned at the beginning, the concept of forced migration under contemporary capitalism. Let me now turn to the next slide, please. Under neoliberal globalization, under contemporary capitalism, human mobility adopts the general characteristic of forced migration, a forced displacement, expanding this category beyond refugees and asylum seekers. It entails a regressive shift propelled by the deprivation of the means of production and subsistence. These possessions violence and natural disasters that put at risk the survival of large segments of the population in places of origin. This massive compulsive displacement that characterizes contemporary capitalism imposes structural and legal restrictions on the migrant workforce, depreciating and subjecting it to conditions of high vulnerability, precariousness, and super exploitation. Next slide, please. So we have been arguing in many of these international fora and many, many discussions also in the academic arena to the need to expand the category of forced migration. So we have here, I will just give you an idea of the numbers. Migration due to violence, conflict, and catastrophes, according to the UN Refugee Organization, 79.5 million, of which 26 million are refugees, 45.7 million are internally displaced, and 4.2 million asylum seekers. Smuggling, then we have a smuggling and trafficking of persons, a little more than 40 million, according to ILO figures. And migration due to dispossession, exclusion, extreme poverty, unemployment, which is the most important now category of forced migration today, which encompasses at least 120 million economic, and I put in quotations now, economic international migrants. Then we have migration, and I will talk a little about highly qualified migration due to overqualification and lack of opportunities, that there is around 30 million. And also return migration in response to massive deportations today. Next slide, please. Well, regardless of the strategic importance of migration and development in the contemporary policy agenda, public perceptions of human mobility are fraught with myths that distort reality under unilateral, decontextualized, reductionist, and biased view. In order to reverse or at least confront these distorted views, we have made a systematic effort to build an alternative, solidly grounded, critical, comprehensive, and inclusive vision of the main drivers and consequences of contemporary migration through a series of strategic indicators in several critical areas. Put forward a few of these indicators, focusing on the Mexico-US migration corridor, which is, Mexico is the second largest, as you can see in this slide, is the second largest immigration country in the world today, but also Mexico is the largest transit corridor in the world today. Next slide, please. In this slide is especially important. You can see here Mexican migration to the U.S. It started around 1850 when we lost half of the Mexican territory with the U.S. and grew very slowly until the end of the what was the industrialization of Mexico. And what I want to emphasize is when we applied in Mexico the neoliberal policies, the structural adjustment programs in the country that were imposed in the country, then migration grew exponentially. as you can see. And this was also reinforced by NAFTA, by the free trade agreement with the U.S. and Canada of Mexico. So then suddenly, and as was seen also in the previous slide, Mexico actually became the largest immigration country in the world in 2010. And now we are second just after India. Next slide, please. Next slide. Well, now I want to show some of these indicators that have been constructed by a team of experts in national accounting and in many other fields, and basically based on national statistics and census data. From 2000 to 2015, in the U.S., the growth, the increase in the labor market has been filled up by immigrants in 45.2%. This is something that is very important to realize and to understand. And you can see that also the descent of these immigrants, like for instance Mexican Americans, are also important components of the increase of the labor market in the U.S. Also to cover the demand of the labor market. Next slide, please. In a big contrast with the previous slide, you can see that the largest country with irregular immigrants in the U.S. is by far Mexico, but also the three countries of the Northern Triangle of Central America, Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. Next slide, please. What I've been arguing in different international fora is that irregular migration is not really a criminal act, but it's basically a state policy. And this is the basis of the argument. Between 2000 and 2015, the U.S. labor market demand grew in 13 million. 5.8 million immigrants were needed to cover this demand. The increase of temporary migration visas was of 300,000. This implied that 5.5 million permanent visas were required. However, the limit for yearly permanent visas established by the Homeland Security Department is 140,000, a maximum of 2.1 million between 2000 and 2015. This state policy generated a deficit of 3.4 million visas in order to cover the U.S. actual labor demand, assuming the U.S. unemployment average rate was of 5%, which has been historically the unemployment rate in the U.S. So this is the basis of this argument. The next slide, please. So a consequence of this that we want to make visible, especially visible, is that the contribution of migrants to the growth of the largest economy in the world, the U.S. economy, from 2000 to this is a wrong point in the slide, is to from 2000 to 2015. So the contributions of migrants to the growth, to the increase of the GDP in the U.S., is 40.8% in this large period. So this is one indicator of the importance of migration for the U.S. economy. Next slide, please. Well, there's something that I think is very important is the increase. I think that you have been discussing in this seminar some things regarding high-skilled migration. This is high-skilled migration is growing and is growing faster than, at rate faster than other types of migration today. In the case of Mexico, I just finished a recent book on highly skilled migration. So we have now 1.6 million professionals abroad. And you can see from the graph that it has been growing exponentially, and particularly with high skill level with graduate studies, as you can see. Next slide, please. Well, this is quite important. In the last years, Mexico moved from the ninth place in migrants with graduate degree in the U.S. to the third place, which also keeps up today. Here you can see that in 2019, which is the last data that we have available, we had almost 166 Mexicans with master's degree living in the U.S., and nearly 40,000 of PhDs, which are more than the members of the National Research System of Mexico. This implies that that we in Mexico have more scientific and technological capacity abroad than in the country. This is something that I think is very crucial, very important to keep in mind. Next slide, please. I mention all this because one of the main strengths of the U.S. is its leadership in innovation. And 76% of the patents in the U.S. universities are by foreigners. They play also a key role in cutting-edge areas. Another important data that I think is important to keep in mind is that the rate of patenting by foreigners in the U.S. grew from 18% in 1963 to 54% in 2021. This, I'm sure, describes not only a slight move, but an important structural change in innovation in the U.S. It depends more and more on foreigners. 91% of U.S. patents, and this is connected with what I mentioned previously, were granted to multinational corporations. Some people are the ones who make the inventions, and the large corporations are profiting from them. 7 of the top 10 and 36 of the top 100 firms innovation firms are headquartered in the U.S. Next slide, please. And to end up this part of my presentation, I want to put forward this important slide. Here we try to talk about the costs of migration for the country of origin, which is very unusual not to talk about this. And I have presented this data. I won't have enough time to discuss what we included here. But we try to estimate, in the case of Mexico, the educational and social reproduction cost of the immigrants to the U.S. Where they, when the level of education they had when they first arrived to the U.S., and also what were more or less an estimation of the basic food and shelter costs of these migrants. And what we came out, and this is important to put forward, is that, that Mexico spent almost the double of what we received in that big period of remittances, accumulated by of remittances. So instead of a north-south subsidy, remittances are also, and perhaps more importantly, not also, but more importantly, a south-north subsidy. Actually, it is a kind of modality of an equal exchange. And also we estimated and we calculated what would have been the cost for the U.S. if they were born in the U.S., this migrant workforce. They were educated in the U.S. The cost for the U.S. is seven times more than what the remittance sent from the U.S. to Mexico in that period. Next slide, please. And let me now say a few words regarding the global governance of migration. Next slide. Well, global governance is the institutional, regards to the institutional framework for building agreements, establishing principles and norms, and for settling controversies at a multilateral level on issues that transcend the nation state. The UN has operated as a privileged space for global governance on critical topics of the international agenda. But there are also other powerful governance bodies, such as the, and I want also to emphasize this, such as the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, the World Intellectual Property Organization, that are directly controlled by the imperial powers, and that are increasingly, and this is also important to mention, penetrating the UN system. It is essentially an intergovernmental space with limited and constrained participation of civil society. Next slide, please. Here I try to map this process of migration governance. It started in after Second World War with IOM and UN, the UN Refugee Agency, in 1950. Then we have like an important landmark that was the UN Convention on the Rights of All Migrant Workers in 1990. This convention, and this is important to mention, has not been ratified since then by almost all of the big, the important migrant receiving countries in the world. There was, after that, there was an international conference on population and development in Cairo in 1992. And then there started a new discussion on by the Global Commission on International Migration from 2003 to 2005, that then dealt with this important issue that relates migration to development, the UN high-level dialogue on migration and development that was held in 2006 and 2013 at the UN headquarters in New York. Then we started the Global Forum on Migration and Development in 2007 in Brussels. And we have in the Arab Emirates, the last one in 2020. After that, there was the New York Declaration on Refugees and Migrants in 2016 that was the starting point of the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration in 2018 in Morocco. And there is going to be an International Migration Review Forum in 2022 to review the progress in all the initiatives that came out from the Global Compact for Safe, Orderly, and Regular Migration. Next slide, please. Well, just a few words about the participation of civil society in the global governance of migration. I have been a participant in all the different forums of migration and development since its beginning. And actually, I was one of the keynote speakers in Brussels in the launching of the first Global Forum on Migration and Development. The global governance of migration is, by definition, an intergovernmental space, as I mentioned before. The participation of civil society has been recognized by the UN as both useful and necessary. Many contributions to the debate on migration and development, particularly in support of the counter-hegemonic perspective, have been made by the progressive wing of civil society participants. However, this possibility is structurally and institutionally limited. The results so far of these attempts of global governance of migration globally, following a balance of global migration governance made by Alexander Betts, could be posited in the following terms. The overall picture of global migration governance remains incoherent, poorly understood, and lacks of an overarching vision. Next slide, please. Just a word regarding the World Social Forum on Migrations, which is an alternative space that was launched in Porto Alegre, Brazil in 2005. And the last three meetings were held in Ecuador, Manila, South Africa, Sao Paulo, and the last one that was organized by our network in Mexico City in November 2018. The World Social Forum is a global process of and by social movements, mass organizations, civil society activists, and advocates. It explores an alternative world order and the building of societies and communities characterized by mutually beneficial relationships among people and within the environment. The World Social Forum promotes and consolidates a globalization of solidarity, collective analysis, discourse, and people's action. Next slide. In the last World Social Forum that was held in Mexico City, one of the main resolutions, one of the main initiatives was to promote a global network of sanctuary, solidary, sustainable cities. That are cities that recognize migrants as persons with full human rights, regardless of their immigration status, and that promote local legislation in line with this principle. Cities that promote a discourse, a demystifying narrative about human mobility. Cities that contribute to forging a multilateral identity and respect ethnic, gender, and religious diversity. Cities that promote institutional solidarity based on strategic alliances between social organizations and progressive movements. I should say that there has been small progress in this initiative because of the pandemic. Mexico City is by law a sanctuary city. I won't have enough time to go in depth into this process, but we started to have some discussions of this issue in the in Lecce in Italy, in the Sabir Festival, but also in different fora in Europe and in Latin America. But next slide, please. Well, just to conclude, since I'm running out of time, migration is a key aspect of contemporary capitalism. This is undeniable. The dominant debate on migration and development, as I call the dominant perspective, the mainstream perspective, is fraught with myths that distort reality under a unilateral, decontextualized, reductionist, and biased view of human mobility. Migration as also represents a south-north subsidy, and this has to be also recognized. The strategic importance of migration, including high-skilled migration for northern countries, is not recognized, nor the super exploitation conditions and ethnic and gender discrimination under which the majority of migrants are subjected, and the significant costs of migration for sending countries. Decriminalization of migrants is essentially a state policy promoted by some of the main destination countries. Next slide, please. Something that I've been doing in the different fora is that we have to reframe the migration and development question for the 21st century. And a critical issue for this, as I have been arguing throughout this presentation, is the notion, the concept of exportation of labor power. In a first stage, this was composed by low-skilled labor through assembly plants in the South, a labor South-North migration. In a second stage that is very close to now and is growingly important, we have an exportation of labor power at full that includes not only low-skilled migration, but increasingly highly skilled labor migration, direct through labor high-skilled labor migration, but also disembodied through also what I call scientific and technological maquiladoras, like the case of Bangalore in India, but in Mexico, we have in Guadalajara an important scientific and technological maquiladora, and many, many other countries in the south. So this turns into an important paradox. There is, with this new importance of highly skilled migration from the south, there is growing scientific and technological capacity in the south that is at the service of the north and against the south. And this can be changed, and this is a big challenge that we have. And the next, and my last slide. So we are actually facing a civilizational crossroad. There are some possibilities raised by the COVID-19 pandemic with many, many challenges. But there is, I think, an important need, an increasing need to transcend neoliberalism. And I think, and I certainly hope that this is going to be something that is going to come up when we return to a new normality and in harmony with nature. And the big, big question, and I will end up my presentation with this, is could it be an opportunity for the periphery? And I believe this is true. We have a new opportunity for the periphery, and we have to have a deep understanding of today's problematic. Thank you very much.
This lecture was part of the EMN Educational Seminar on Migration entitled Migration in the Multilateral World. The seminar is organized by the International Organization for Migration Slovakia as the coordinator of the Slovak EMN National Contact Point. This activity is funded by the European Union and co-funded by the Ministry of Interior of the Slovak Republic. Thank you for listening.